This is Alfred Beauvais, Editor-in-Chief of AXL. AXL is the American College of Cardiology Extended Learning Series, featuring conversations in cardiology with the scientists who conduct research in our field and the clinicians who are translating that research into clinical practice. As an AXL subscriber, you will receive 24 new interviews each month, plus, depending on your subscription level, we'll have access to hundreds of interviews in our digital library. With AXL, you can stream or download your content for convenient offline access on your mobile device, and each interview qualifies for CME credit and MOC self-assessment points. For more information, visit acc.org/ACCEL.
Hello, I'm Magnus Öhman here at the Late Breaking Clinical Trials at the American College of Cardiology meeting. And I'm here with Professor Gabriel Stagg, who is Professor of Cardiology at Hospital Bichat in Paris, and also with Dr. Roger Blumenthal, who's Professor of Cardiology at Johns Hopkins, Baltimore, Maryland. And we're going to discuss one of the trials presented by Gabriel, namely cardiovascular outcomes with elarucumab after acute coronary syndrome, results of the Odyssey Outcomes trial. So welcome both of you.
Thank you.
Hello.
So I'm going to start with you, Roger. So we have had both PCSK9 inhibitors available now for a little bit over 2 years in the United States, and they're not used. So what are the issues here that we need to consider?
Well, Magnus, the PCSK9 inhibitors clearly are very effective at lowering LDL 50% to 70%. But in terms of cost-effective analyses, the concern had been that the cost of the medicines is too high and that cost-effective analyses are driven by mortality gains. And until now, we really did not have the decrease in mortality. The Fourier study also showed a nice decrease in cardiovascular morbidity, but not mortality. So that's why we're very interested in today's presentation by Dr. Stagg.
So the Fourier trial, Roger, that was with evolucumab. So that's another PCSK9 inhibitor. And essentially, that trial had some benefits. What did it show?
That study showed a clear decrease in cardiovascular morbidity. However, we didn't see the overall decrease in mortality. That study lasted 2.2 years. And it did show that the effect was greater in those people with more recent MIs, people who were higher risk because of peripheral arterial disease, and those with multivessel disease. But we just didn't see that overall decrease in total mortality.
So, Gabriel, when you were designing the Odyssey trial, tell us a little bit about what your thinking was when you went forward with this trial in a post-ACS population, and a little bit what the trial encompassed.
So we thought that if these agents were to be used on top of statins and the existing secondary prevention therapies, they would need to be used in the highest possible risk patients. And among coronary artery disease patients, the highest risk patients are the post-ACS patients. So that's the choice of the target population. The second choice we made was to have a target range for LDL. So instead of hitting the patients with all our might with the highest possible dose and try to get LDLs as low as possible, we wanted to get patients into a range of approximately 25 to 50 milligrams LDL for patients who were not at goal on maximal statin therapy, accepting LDLs as low as 15. But then for those patients who remain consistently below 15, to down titrate them because, A, at the time, 2011, we didn't know what the safety would be for these patients. There were real concerns regarding neurocognition, glucose metabolism, etc. And also because we felt that this would mimic what happens in clinical practice, which is that when you get LDL values in the teens, physicians and patients are not comfortable and they down titrate the background statin or they down titrate the PCSK9s because nobody knows for sure what happens long term with these LDL values. At least we didn't know at the time. And so we felt it would be both safer and probably more clinically relevant to get patients into a much lower range than the conventional range of 70, get them into the 15 to 50, but not below 15.
So that's quite unique. That hasn't really been done before. So it's really sort of mimicking practice, which is very important for our listeners to understand. Now, patients were randomized as early as 2 weeks. I presume they were well treated.
So these were post-ACS patients. They had to be more than 40 years of age, have an established ACS, clearly have maximal statin therapy. And when I say maximal statin therapy, we insisted on patients receiving either 40 or 80 milligrams of atorvastatin, 20 or 40 milligrams of rosuvastatin. And if they were not receiving these doses, they had to be documentation of why. And if they didn't receive any statin, they had to have a documented failure of at least two different statins or documented biochemical abnormalities on statins. And finally, to get into the trial, they had to have high levels of atherogenic lipoproteins, which could be any of the following three: elevated LDL above 70, elevated ApoB or elevated non-HDL cholesterol, but the overwhelming majority of the patients qualified on the basis of LDL above 70.
So, Roger, these would you say are fairly well-treated post-ACS? This is what we see today. And so the question comes up, can a therapy improve this? Is this your perception?
Exactly. I think there's been a greater comfort level now with PCSK9 inhibitors, but still the vast majority of cardiologists haven't prescribed them in the States, or if they have, it's been relatively few. And the thought process was that maybe we should only reserve those for individuals with the higher LDLs. And if we already had LDLs below 100, most U.S. cardiologists were waiting for the data that Dr. Steg was able to present.
So in the trial then, you randomized patients to placebo versus
alirocumab every 2 weeks subcutaneously. And with a blinded titration algorithm, we started with 75 milligrams every 2 weeks, tested them. If they were not at goal, we increased to 150. If they were below the goal, the target range, then we down titrated them. And if they were consistently below 15 at two consecutive measurements, they were down titrated. And if they were on the lower dose, they were then switched to placebo, which is quite a drastic move we took and I'm sure is going to be discussed.
So tell me, how much drop in the LDL cholesterol did you have?
So we anticipated that we would start at approximately 90 milligrams LDL baseline, and we started with a median of 87. And we anticipated a 50% reduction, and we actually got slightly more up front and then slightly less over time, because with the down titration and the treatment discontinuations, actually there was some catch-up in the LDL cholesterol, creep-up, if I may say, as well as, to be fair, I think a real amount of statin discontinuation or down titration in both treatment arms. In fact, even in the placebo arm, we saw the LDL creep back up. And I think this is a reflection of our choice to select ACS patients, the overwhelming majority of whom had never been exposed to statins before and were put on maximal statins therapy at the time of trial entry. And therefore, some of them developed intolerance or decided to down titrate their statins.
And I assume your primary endpoint was cardiovascular death and myocardial stroke.
So our primary composite outcome was a slight variation of that. It was the composite of CHD deaths, MI, ischemic stroke, and unstable angina, using a very stringent definition for unstable angina. And what we found is threefold. First of all, we found a 15% reduction in major adverse cardiac event, our primary efficacy endpoint, highly statistically significant, with a slight lag before the treatment appears, so that there's a difference between the treatment during the first year and the treatment beyond. Actually, the data fits really a two-compartment model rather than a proportional hazards. The second observation is that there was a 15% lower all-cause mortality in the alirocumab arm than in the placebo arm. I'm reluctant to say there was a reduction because the p-value for this was 0.026, but there's a technicality with the statistical analysis, which is that to avoid multiplicity or to account for multiple testing, we pre-specified a hierarchy of analysis, which typically stops when you have an endpoint that is no longer significant. And in that sequence that we pre-specified, all-cause mortality came after CHD and CV mortality, which were not statistically significantly reduced, even though there was a trend in the right direction. The third finding is that there was remarkable safety. Despite our own concerns when the trial started and many people's concerns regarding getting LDL values very low in patients post-ACS, we observed no increase in the incidence of new diabetes, no neurocognitive dysfunction or abnormalities, no allergies, no intracranial hemorrhage, no cataracts, nothing except local injection site reactions, which were really rare.
Roger, this is pretty impressive. You asked about mortality. You got it. What do you say here?
Well, it's extremely impressive, especially in the group that started off with LDLs greater than 100. We saw the greatest benefits, and 15% reductions is what we saw in Fourier, what we saw in CANTOS, and now another 15% decrease in MACE. And the benefit is greatest in the people that start the highest, and that's what we learned from the Cholesterol Treatment Trialist collaboration, that the more you drop LDL, the more expected benefit you're likely to see.
So this is almost a home run, would you say?
It's definitely a home run for our French colleagues. And I don't know if Major League Baseball is as popular in France, but this is definitely a home run.
So where do you see this going next? Because obviously translating this into the practice of medicine will be so important.
What's interesting here is two things. First of all, typically when we discuss therapies for secondary prevention, we discuss the risk-benefit ratio. And when we look at the equation here, it's almost all benefit and no risk. So that's really exciting. If that therapy was extremely cheap, we would use it tomorrow in absolutely everybody. The only reason we have a problem is, as we know, it's not cheap. And therefore, we have to find the best candidates where to start. And our post-hoc analysis suggests that the best candidates are probably, as you point out, the patients who start off with the highest LDL values at baseline above 100, because in that subgroup, instead of getting 15% and 15% for MACE and mortality, we get 24% and 29%. And since on top of this, the absolute risk is greater, then we get a greater absolute risk reduction. The absolute risk reduction is 3.4% for MACE, 1.7% for mortality.
That's a great summary from both of you, and I just want to remind all of you that the last time we had secondary prevention post-ACS, it was called aspirin. It was cheap, but it also gave a rise to 25% reduction in mortality. So congratulations, Gabriel, for a great study.
Thank you.
Fabulous work.
This is Alfred Beauvais, Editor-in-Chief of Axel. For more information on how to subscribe to Axel and receive additional interviews published each month, go to acc.org/accel.